We're back, listeners. My guest is Edwin Vieira. Edwin, right before the break, we were talking about, you were clipping along at a fast pace. You covered the, we missed some important grounds. Can we go back?
Sure. Where do you want to go?
In the last week or so, I've had some debates or arguments with people on the internet about whether or not the Federal Reserve is a private organization. Explain that for us, please.
Well, I think that's due to two facts. First, they get confused by terminology. They talk about the Federal Reserve. You leave out a word. It's the Federal Reserve System, all right? It's not a Federal Reserve Bank in the sense of the Deutsche Bank, the German Central Bank, which is one unit. It's a Federal Reserve System, and then, of course, you have to look at the parts of the system. Now, the system is made up from the top down of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, the seven people who are appointed by the President and confirmed by the Senate. And there's an interesting question as to whether, as under the Bank of the United States, those people are officers of the United States, are government agents. Simply because they're appointed by the President, confirmed by the Senate, doesn't necessarily make it so. But even if you assume that they are officers of the United States, the next level down are 12 corporations, 12 Federal Reserve banks, regional banks. Those were chartered by Congress, but they are private corporations. There are many institutions chartered by Congress that are private corporations. It's been chartering corporations since the Constitution was ratified. These 12 are private corporations, and it's been held as such by the courts. So there's nearly no question that that layer in the system is private.
So an individual bank, like the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, it has its stockholders, member banks.
Well, that's that's the next level.
Okay.
That's the next level. The next level is made up of the stockholders. Now, theoretically, private persons could buy stock in the Federal Reserve System, but if you read the statute, it's very clear that if you are not a member bank and you happen to own stock, you cannot use that stock for voting purposes. Only the member banks that own stock have a vote. The member banks in the system are the national or state banks, commercial banks all over the country. They are clearly private organizations, Chase Manhattan, Bank of America, Wachovia, you name your favorite bank, and you'll find that it's a member of the Federal Reserve System. As a consequence or a requirement, really, of being a member, they have to subscribe 6% of their capital value to stock in their regional bank, because there's 12 different federal regions. Wherever that member bank is, it's part of the structure in that particular region. And then on the basis of that stock ownership, those member banks get to vote for essentially two-thirds of the directors and officers of the regional banks. So there's our control structure. It's a cartel, a large number of these private banks that are given certain kinds of legal monopoly privileges, and it's what would be called in political economic theory a corporative state structure, because it is a cartel in which the government to some degree participates.
But in any event, each Federal Reserve Bank, while it's federally chartered, and of course, hey, look, the Boy Scouts of America was chartered by Congress.
National Education Association.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can run down a list of these people who are.
You know, I've got a list of federally chartered private corporations.
Yeah.
They've been doing it, as you said, since the Constitution. And that's all the Federal Reserve Banks are, and they're owned by the member banks.
That's right.
And the member banks are private, and therefore, consequently, the Federal Reserve Banks are private. They're nothing more than a federally chartered corporation, a stock-issuing corporation.
That's right.
It's private, and the courts have been so held, right?
Right, the courts have so held. Lewis versus the United States is a classic example where that the whole thing turned on that question. And it's just a peculiarity that the stock of those regional banks happens to be owned by other banks.
Yeah.
As opposed to individuals in a typical corporation. But that's the structure because it was designed to be a specifically banking cartel.
Okay, Edwin, we got another commercial break. Come back and listen to us for the rest of the program. Another 50 minutes.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Take the heat out of your sleep. The Bedfan Personal Cooling System will work for anyone that is a hot sleeper, regardless of the reason. It gives you a deep, restful sleep, the way nature intended. No more tossing and turning. Say goodbye to sleepless nights. So ask yourself, are you a hot sleeper and really want to sleep cooler? A woman who suffers from the effects of menopause, including night sweats derived from hot flashes, have a medical condition that causes your body to get hot at night, or just want to save money on your air conditioning bill. It works instantly. No tools or assembly required. Don't worry. The Bedfan fits short beds, tall beds, beds with footboards, sleigh beds, water beds, and many other types of beds. If you want great relief and total comfort, give us a call at 1-210-632-8280. That's 1-210-632-8280. Or visit our site at bedfan.com, your provider for great sleep.
Why continue suffering from pain, illness, and disease when natural health and wellness therapies are within your reach? Hundreds of people are reporting improved health and wellness using Rife frequency technology. In the 1920s, research scientist Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using resonant frequencies. The BioSolution frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions. There are no reported side effects. Join others in discovering a return to natural health and wellness. Just don't treat the symptoms, eliminate the cause. BioSolutions has over 550 pre-programmed auto sequences for various health conditions, and it's very easy to use. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that number, 866-885-6625.
My guest today is Vieira. And before the break, Edwin, we were talking about the Federal Reserve banks being private. Mm-hmm. So right. Those that are making the argument about this being the government itself, is that's just all wet. What about the board?
Well, that's the interesting question. It has really never been adjudicated one way or the other. And as I say, the historical parallel to the directors of the Bank of the United States was that they were held not to be officers, notwithstanding that the President of the United States and the Senate confirmed, the President appointed, and the Senate confirmed them. So you've got a situation here that's equivocal, ambiguous. But the interesting point is, even if you assume that the capstone of this pyramid, those seven people, are officers, nonetheless, the way the decisions are made within the system, they are not solely in control. I mean, those corporations are clearly private corporations. The Federal Reserve 12 regional banks are controlled in terms of their directors and officers by the commercial member banks, which are all private banks. And if you look at the major committee that makes decisions on monetary policy, the so-called Federal Open Market Committee, that's made up of the seven Board of Governors, and it's made up of five representatives of the regional banks on a rotating basis. So you say, well, it's a 7-5 majority for this Board of Governors. Well, that's if they all vote the same way. It's certainly conceivable if you have a split on the board that it's the private parties that are going to determine policy. And in any event, you have private parties in there determining governmental policy. I mean, they're participating in the process. And one thing is fairly clear from certainly Supreme Court decisions in the 1930s, when a lot of that type of thing was being done by the Roosevelt administration, the cases that came to the Supreme Court, two famous ones, the Schechter case and the Carter case, in both instances, the Supreme Court ruled unanimously on the particular point. So you can't give that kind, you can't delegate that kind of authority to a private party. Now, the reason the banks are still here is because their system was separate. It was created in 1913, and it was separate from the system that Roosevelt created, the National Industrial Recovery Act and the Bituminous Coal Conservation Act, in the early 1930s. So when those two cases came to the Supreme Court, they dealt with entirely different areas in the economy, and there was never a case that brought up the question of the Federal Reserve structure. Now, recently, let's say in the last 20, 25 years or so, there have been a number of cases going into the U.S. courts in District of Columbia in which various parties have tried to challenge the composition of the Federal Open Market Committee precisely because it has these five undoubted private representatives on it. And every one of those cases, the courts have refused to issue a ruling on the merits. They've avoided it by some standing doctrine or some other avoidance technique, judicial avoidance technique, which tells me that they know bloody well what the situation is. They don't want to face it.
Yeah.
They don't want to admit it. So that's the situation you have. You have and it's something that it makes a heck of a lot of sense from the point of view of the history. The history of the relationship of banks and government has always been one of private parties interfacing and interacting through monopoly privilege legislation with the government treasury. The only time we've had something that was different was, of course, the greenbacks under Lincoln. But even the greenbacks under Lincoln, you know what would happen? The Lincoln greenbacks were issued, and the banks would take those greenbacks, and they'd buy government bonds with them, and the government bonds were paying gold interest, and then they'd take the government bonds or the greenbacks themselves, put them into their reserves, and issue their own currency. So there was even an interface there. We've never had a situation in this country under the Constitution where you've had the government, in terms of currency at least, where the government treasury being separate from the banks, except that period during Jackson when you had a complete separation. So it's not surprising, number one, historically. And the reason for it, obviously, is that high finance in this country, private power in the financial market, has a lot of political influence. That's one side of the coin. And the other side of the coin is, by making this relationship, creating this relationship, of course, the politicians benefit because now they can turn to the banks for monetizing debt.
Yes.
And they have the ability to lean, essentially, on the economic power of the high finance circles. So that's the relationship that we have. Now, the difficulty is it's always been built on the fractional reserve principle, and now on the fractional reserve principle with irredeemability. Remember, during the whole period up to 1933, all of these systems were tied to gold and silver, ultimately tied to gold and silver. So you had a foundation of sound constitutional money, sound economic money, if you will, free market-based money, commodity money. They all failed not because it was based on commodity money, or because the Constitution is faulty. They all failed because they were attempting to run this essentially fraudulent fractional reserve system, which can't function in the long run. I suppose it could if you had angels running it, because they would never overexpand. They would always expand only to the most prudent point. But the reality is, in the world that we actually have, where angels aren't running the system, the bankers want to expand, and so they drive that reserve down to the lowest level. The lenders want more money to finance their projects. So the two of them work hand in hand. And, of course, the government wants to expand because they would love to monetize debt rather than to tax. Taxation is very unpopular. Monetization of debt, most people don't understand. And the payoff comes later on to some generation in the future, which is hit with the tax bill to pay the bonds, unless they keep rolling them over, which is actually the real trick. They never pay them. They just, when one bond comes due, they just issue another one, and the banks are happy to collect interest on this. So all of these things are conspiring together until what happens? Until the inherent instability, economic instability of that system makes itself manifest. Until we have the kind of thing that we're seeing now.
Well, that
breakdown.
Brings us back to where we were at the beginning of the program.
That's right.
What does the future hold for us?
More of the same and worse, because the system is unstable. This is not a system that can be corrected internally. And so we have Mr. Bernanke, who's the helicopter
Bernanke,
who's saying, well, don't worry about it, because we'll generate all the quote-unquote liquidity, means new money, new credit, that's necessary. How much did they do the last week, $300 billion or something, $400 billion?
I've heard varying reports.
Yeah, well, it's huge numbers. It's over $100 billion in any event. Significant numbers that are coming out. And the problem is that they're on a treadmill. Oh, sure, he can put out $100 billion, $200 billion now, and that just keeps the system going to the next level of crisis. And then
just
he'll
like
have to
the
put
German
out
hyperinflation of 1920, 21,
that's right. Then it has to be $500 billion, then $700 billion, then it eventually gets to the point where they're generating so much that no one takes the currency anymore and the system collapses, at which point, or one would think before that, at which point they offer us what? The Amero. Right? At the point where everybody realizes this system is failing, they will then come in as the saviors in the same way they did in 1913. It was the same argument. The national banking system had given us the 1907 collapse, 1907 depression, terrible thing. We need elasticity. We need a new structure. We need the Federal Reserve. We need a new currency, and here it is. And they had that plan already laid out, and I'm sure they have their plan already laid out for the Amero, because they know as well as better. They know better than anybody else.
Well, we've had a war over in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and we've been pumping credit. You know, we've got economic problems because the focus of the creation of credit used to be internal before we got off into this war. Now we've got all this. The focus of credit is external. We got to send all this credit overseas, and it ends up in the hands of the Euro banks and everything else, and they fractionalize this, and we've got hyperinflation that's happening around the world as a result of the actions of the Federal Reserve and the Treasury.
That's right. We should, and we certainly hope that all of this quote-unquote liquidity, all of these paper assets denominated in Federal Reserve notes, don't all of a sudden come back into the United States, because then we'll see hyperinflation that will be on the level of the German experience in the 1920s.
Let me stop you right there, if I can. China, they sit there and, well, you know, of course, there's all these daily reports coming out. You know, your underwear's got, you know,
formaldehyde or whatever it is.
That's the latest thing, you know. But if you've got lead painted toys and bad seafood, you know, that's some of the response to what China's doing. But they sit there and hold, a trillion dollars worth of assets?
Right. Now, they're in an interesting position because, of course, if they take action that results in the depreciation of those assets, of course, they're going to lose. But on the other hand, if they simply hold it and the assets depreciate on their own, they're also going to lose. So they really have to make a nice calculation. The interesting thing to me about the Chinese is they could make that calculation based upon political judgments. That is, they might start repatriating to the United States or those assets precisely to create a crisis here for their own political benefit in Asia.
Right.
So they really are holding us hostage. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, ha, 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 we sent them all of these Federal Reserve note units. I guess we didn't send the actual currency, but we sent bank-denominated claims. And they sent
They have $1 trillion in bonds in the Federal Reserve note of New York.
That's right. And we sent them all this paper, and they sent us all these wonderful goods. And the answer is, yeah, well, if they eat the paper, if they burn the paper, that's fine. But if they send that paper back here, we're going to have to make good on it. And they could come back here and start buying up land. Now, of course, you'd have a hyperinflation in the price of land, but a lot of it would end up in the hands of the Chinese government. They'd buy a heck of a lot of it before the hyperinflation eventuated. So it's interesting. We haven't really swindled them in the long term, because the money has not been declared. The money they have, the paper they have, has not been declared invalid. They can come back and use it here. We're kind of sitting on the edge of a volcano, waiting for it to erupt. So the financial. What I'm getting at here is that whether you look at this internationally or domestically, our financial situation is not a desirable one, and we need to be thinking about alternatives before it's too late.
Well, that's a very good point to stop right before this break, and that's the point we'll resume with after this commercial.
Mm-hmm. With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Morning, neighbor.
Hey, shouldn't you be at work?
I am. As a matter of fact, I pulled another all-nighter.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, at least I'm making money 24/7. But I never have to go to work.
So, what do you do?
Not very much at all now. About a month ago, I heard about this website. It's got a funny name. It's DidYouRobBillGates.com.
That is funny.
Yeah, you can earn $1,200 to $12,000 a week starting the very first week.
Oh, is that how you bought that new mower?
Yeah, and the motorcycle I've always wanted, too. You should log on. Find out how you can become financially free.
So what was that website?
It's www.DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Just wait, I'll go get a pen so I can write that down.
You don't need to write it down. It's easy to remember. DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Yeah, DidYouRobBillGates.com. That is easy.
It's easy, and the money is awesome.
We're back, listeners. We got about another 35 minutes in this program. We got Edwin Vieira on here. Edwin wrote, back in about 2001, 2002, is published. I think I got my copy in December of 2001, but it was this new revised, the revision of Pieces of Eight, 1,700 pages long. Let me just tell you, ladies and gentlemen, in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, I'll ask Edwin here in a few minutes if I'm correct, that work should be available on DVD, word searchable. Excellent way to make available to the rest of America Edwin's book. Edwin, am I right about that? In the next couple of weeks, will Pieces of Eight be available on DVD?
Well, I hope that in the next couple of weeks we will have the master, right? And then we'll have to see about the production.
Okay.
So when we're working on it now and we're trying to get all of the technical glitches out of it.
So sometime this fall, people ought to...
For sure. Yeah,
good.
I think that's morally certain, right? Because we're very close to it now, but we want to be sure that we don't end up having to do it again, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Get it done once and finish it. Now,
getting back to what we brought up,
right.
The point of... Go ahead.
Well, we were talking about alternatives or what we need to do here, and obviously the other side has an alternative for us. It's called the North American Union and the Amero, which is, you know, more of the same, except on a hemispheric as opposed to a national level. And I don't think we want that, but unless we provide our own alternative, that's what we will get, that or chaos. I mean, that's what they're going to offer us. It's that or chaos. Now, lots of people say, and I've heard, you've heard, oh, this is simple. All we do is have the Treasury buy back the Federal Reserve and, you know, things are better. And I've heard people say if Ron Paul were elected president, you know, he would end the Federal Reserve. Well, it's not quite as simple as that. You have a major economy, major world economy, which is based upon Federal Reserve note-denominated prices. All of the prices out there of goods and services, many, many, many contracts that are still to be executed are denominated in, quote, dollars, unquote, by which the parties meant Federal Reserve note units. We're not talking about gold dollars, not talking about constitutional silver dollars, we're talking about Federal Reserve note units. And you can't simply introduce a new currency tomorrow that will have different purchasing power and will necessarily fit the present price structure, let alone simply declare the Federal Reserve system invalid. Then what happens? How do you pay off all of these contracts? How do you determine what prices are? And you can't do it from the top down. You can't have some statute passed by Congress that says, well, all prices tomorrow will be, you know, the silver value of prices today. Let's say a loaf of bread today might be, silver is what, 7 to 1? A dollar loaf of bread might be, let's say, 10 to 1. A dollar loaf of bread tomorrow would be 10 cents in silver. Because what will happen when you change the system over, when you declare that tomorrow silver will be a legal tender and will be the money of the country, the purchasing power of silver is going to go very, very high relative to what it is now, and the purchasing power of Federal Reserve notes relative to silver is going to go very, very far down. So the price structure that you declare by statute today will be out of date tomorrow morning. No question of that. You can't have that kind of top-down reorganization. That's the problem of central economic planning. Every time it's been tried in the world, it's failed. There are all sorts of theoretical reasons why it doesn't work. Man, we don't want to go down that road. The solution, or what I call the alternative, the other direction, we need to set up an alternative monetary system so we have a two-track monetary system, one based on gold and silver and one still running the Federal Reserve note as its unit. Private banks, disconnected from the government, that we can do. That's easy enough. Leave the private banks, they're private, so we don't have to get rid of them. They have their currency, Federal Reserve notes, and we're going to let that compete in the free market with gold and silver. Now, that will lead to two things. First, we won't have immediate instability. We won't have an immediate crash or crisis because the Federal Reserve system will still be there and functioning. On the other hand, we will have the ability for people to move away from the Federal Reserve and the banks themselves to move away from irredeemable currency to a market commodity currency based on gold and silver, or consisting of gold and silver. And thirdly, we will give the free market the opportunity to revalue and reset all prices because we'll have a competition. First thing you would see is a place like Walmart. I hate to use that as an example, but it's one people know. Walmart would start having two price structures for all its goods. It would be a paper money price structure and a silver price structure. And then eventually, if the paper money system couldn't compete, and I think it couldn't, you would have the paper money prices would go higher and higher and higher and higher, and the silver prices would start to move down, and eventually people, the Walmart would not take paper. They would only take silver. And I would propose that that's what you do. You set up a two-tier price structure, and the government is the driving factor. You have the government pay its debts and collect its taxes in gold and silver, phasing it in over a period of 6 months, 8 months, a year, so you give people an opportunity to get used to this. And then you let the free market determine all the other prices and arrangements that are necessary. Now, I would
talk about reversing Gresham's law.
Yeah, of course it would be, because people are going to go away from bad money to good money, especially if the survival of our nation is involved, if it isn't simply a personal matter. Now
if we don't do this, we're going to end up looking like Zimbabwe, where the money just rots in your hands.
Yeah, and then again, they're going to give you the Amero, so you won't even have the national independence of Zimbabwe, if you will. All right, it's going to be worse than Zimbabwe.
Well, listeners, we got another break. Stay tuned. We got 1/2 hour left in this program with Edwin Vieira.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond from Most Holy Family Monastery. We are now offering a critically important $10 package. The package contains three DVDs with 10 different programs, our new 658-page book called The Truth About What Really Happened to the Catholic Church After Vatican II, which is the most comprehensive book ever produced on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. You also get another 335-page book and other material. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. At the website, you can watch all of our videos for free, read sample chapters of the new book and other articles, or call us 24 hours a day at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or you can mail in your order to us at Most Holy Family Monastery, 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The price of the whole package is $10, which includes media mail shipping, $15 for UPS ground, or $30 outside the U.S. MostHolyFamilyMonastery.com.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
We're back. This is Larry Beecraft. I'm hosting Tommy Crier's show today, and Edwin Vieira is my guest before the break. And, Edwin, we've got about two more commercials left, so we've got about maybe 20, 22 minutes left in this program. You're telling us about what we can do to resolve the economic, social, political ills of this country if the American people will just simply get off their rear ends and do something about this monster that we have in our midst known as the Federal Reserve System.
Well, that's right. And I've tried to think of a way to make it easy for them, because getting the couch potatoes away from MTV is a pretty daunting task. I don't think this can be done at the congressional level. We're talking about the reformation of the monetary system for a number of reasons. First, it's too big a problem politically. You have to get control of Congress, and not just Congress, but a supermajority of Congress, because unless you also control the presidency, you can imagine a veto coming down, and you have to be able to override that. So you have a difficult political problem there. Number two, any kind of reform along the lines of what I was discussing earlier with the two-track monetary system and so forth, if that's imposed directly on the whole country, you maximize the likelihood of economic crisis, because you have that many more people who may be afraid of what you're doing, who may lose confidence, or all sorts of psychological problems that arise, and you want to minimize that as much as possible. We need to give people confidence in whatever reform is being put into practice. So my proposal is we need to do this state by state, and primarily starting with what I would call a relatively insignificant state,
New Hampshire?
I picked New Hampshire for another reason, but that's one reason, for other reasons as well. Now, obviously, we can't get it in New York, we can't get it in California for political reasons, but I wouldn't do it there for economic reasons because it's so big. Start in a small state where the economy is relatively stable already, where you have a legislature that may actually pay attention to some of these issues, and where if something goes bad, think about this from an insurance point of view, if something goes bad, prudent point of view, well, you're not going to endanger too many people and cause too many losses. Now, I don't think something will go bad, but you want to be prudent in any event. And I happen to have picked New Hampshire for this, for that reason. It's a small state. It has a good legislature. Most of the people there are not professional politicians. If you can get their attention, they'll listen. If you run it there, it would be a good example for the rest of New England. And there are a number of other small states in New England that could follow along. You know, Vermont, Rhode Island, Connecticut come to mind almost immediately. And it's conceivable that even with Massachusetts in that brew, you might be able to get all of New England into this system. And that would obviously be a wonderful example that the rest of the country could follow. Now, I drew up a bill, and it's sitting there. We've been trying to get it out of some committee or other in the New Hampshire legislature for a number of years and haven't been successful because they have their political funnels and control mechanisms there as well as in Congress. And people can view this at goldmoneybill.org, www.goldmoneybill.org, the latest version of it. And what it essentially does is create a two-track monetary system. It says the state is going to take in a certain amount of its taxes in gold, and it's going to pay out that amount of gold to whatever of its creditors, whichever of its creditors ask, first come, first served. And the idea here is if that system works and more of the state's creditors begin asking for gold, eventually the gold fund will run out, and the treasurer will come back to the legislature and say, we need to increase the gold tax base, and eventually you would have the state entirely on the gold system. Now, that creates a pump-priming mechanism throughout the state's economy because people who are paying into the state and people who are getting money out of the state treasury are also engaged in economic transactions within the state, and pretty soon those people are going to be asking for payment in gold in their normal commercial business transactions. And the theory is you would drive the whole state, first the state economy, the state government economy, and then the entire state commercial economy to gold and silver. Of course, the next step would then be that state has commercial transactions with other states, or at least their private companies do, and this gold economy would begin to infiltrate into Vermont, even into Massachusetts, let's say. But there's another consideration here. As soon as you have a stable monetary system within the state of New Hampshire, capital from New England is going to look at New Hampshire as a much better place to invest than Rhode Island or Massachusetts or Connecticut. You're going to see capital moving from those states into New Hampshire, and that will bring pressure on those states to revamp their monetary systems in order to compete. And so you have the force of the free market now driving the system in the direction of sound money, as you say, the reversal of Gresham's law. So this, in fact, can be done. I'm convinced it can be done, but it requires some place where it starts. And that's why I picked New Hampshire, because it seemed to me small enough and stable enough and had these other elements that we might actually be able to get something going there. So I'm still working on it. And the only thing I would tell your listeners, of course, they're from all over, they're not all from New Hampshire, think about the possibility of going to the New Hampshire government website, find out how you write New Hampshire representatives and senators, and why not send in a letter from Alabama, from Kentucky, from Illinois, yeah, saying we're in this as well as you are. We want to see some place in the country be the exemplar, be the standard bearer. Try this experiment because all of us stand to benefit from it. Why don't you people get going and do it? And who knows, we might get 100,000, 200,000 people contacting those legislators in New Hampshire and get the ball moving. So that's an interesting suggestion because it's not simply New Hampshire or New England that would benefit. If we could get this process going, potentially the whole country, because if one or more states prove that it will work, then my guess is that other states will follow, simply because the market, number one, the market is driving them in that direction, and number two, their own people will see the political advantage of having their states on a sound monetary system, especially as these other crises develop. And then, if you had a significant proportion of the country moving in that direction, when our friends in the establishment come to us with the Amero, what are we going to say?
We want gold and silver coin.
Yeah, we don't need it. We don't need the Amero. We have this other thing here which is much better. You keep the Amero, right? And we see how far the Amero gets at that point. So it really amounts to a kind of political checkmate on what the establishment is planning. But it depends upon us making the move in time. Right? We can't wait until all these crises begin to break out much more serious than the ones we already see, because at that point the establishment will come forward and say, oh, terrible crisis, we have a solution, just like 1907. We gave you the Federal Reserve in 1913, 6 years. Right? Now we're going to give you the Amero 3 or 4 years from 2007, 2000. Well, they're telling us. 2009, they've already told us that the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which is the acronym for SPP, the acronym for the first level of this North American Union, will be online to some degree in 2009.
Wow.
All right? That's their date. So we're looking 2009, 2010, 2011. Well, that's about the same time pattern, 5 or 6 years from 1907 to 1913, right? And they're thinking in terms of how long it takes for an economy really to go into an economic crisis. It's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to take 20 years either. It's going to be shorter than that. And so they're already telling us, look to 2010, look to 2011, 2012, whatever. A couple of years after we get the foundations laid, we'll come up with the superstructure, and part of that superstructure will be the Amero. So I'm looking at this from that point of view and saying, oh, well, by that, by next year or the year after, we could have a bill such as the New Hampshire bill passed in New Hampshire, or some smart characters could take that bill, change the language appropriately to fit it into their own state's legislative code, and get it passed in Kentucky or Montana or wherever they have some sympathetic and intelligent legislators, but get it done somewhere and
Edwin,
soon.
There's a need for something else besides this economic legislation. It's the topic of your other book, Constitutional Homeland Security, the militias.
Yes. Well, because I'm looking at the other side of the coin of crisis. And obviously, if the crisis begins to get out of hand, the powers that be are going to attempt to assert control over local America through paramilitary structures. They've already told us that, and obviously they're setting this up because I don't think anyone who has eyes in his head and is observing his local or state police does not see these paramilitary structures being formed. More and more of these black uniform SWAT teams and anti-terrorist teams, they're armed with their machine guns, they're armed with armored cars, they're armed with all this paramilitary equipment that would have been good enough to fight the Battle of Stalingrad, for heaven's sakes.
Seven days ago, at this same time last Saturday, I was talking to a man from east of Memphis, former chief of police of some small town, is being prosecuted over some rinky-dink stuff. His story to me is that right now there is a big push to bring all of state law enforcement, municipal law enforcement, county law enforcement under Homeland Security, and that is going on right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've been pushing this from the LEAA, Law Enforcement Administration, in the last century. This idea of gaining top down control over state, county, municipal, local police departments. And one of the methods they used was economic. They provided these people with funding and training, and that's how many of these agencies ended up with this kind of equipment, which they didn't need at the time. But the plan obviously is to give them the equipment and then have them subject to top-down control so that when a major social crisis develops in various regions, as a result, I think, of these economic crises, not as a result of terrorist acts, but as a result of these economic crises, then directives will come from on high, from the District of Columbia, and all of your local and state police forces will simply follow them because they've essentially been conditioned in a Pavlovian sense. That's where their money comes from. That's where their training comes from. That's where their orders come from. And they will begin acting as agents of the central
government as opposed to agents of local and state government. Now, I look at that and I say that's a very dangerous situation, just in principle, to have that kind of a structure. And it's especially dangerous when we're looking at these economic crises that are actually developing, and we can predict that they're going to become worse. So what I'm trying to do is promote the idea of revitalization of the constitutional militia of the several states. I'm not talking about guys running around the woods with camouflage outfits and rifles on their own, forming private groups. It has nothing to do with that. This is the militia of the several states and the constitutional pattern, which is pursuant to state legislation. So we're going to need to have, again, legislation passed state by state to revitalize these structures. And they would amount to the mobilization organization of the total adult population within each state, at least in principle. Not that you'd call everybody up for training or duty. I mean, we have so many people now that we don't need to go to the point that our colonial ancestors did, where everyone showed up on training days. But we would have everyone in the system. We would have some minimum level of training that everyone would have to take. Certainly everyone who was not a conscientious objector would have to own a firearm and be trained in its use. And we would train a significant number of people to work as, quote-unquote, homeland security functions. I hate that terminology, but it's the one the other side gave us, so we have to use it. Homeland security functions at the state and local, especially the local level, so that the decision-making and the enforcement in any real crisis, and let's face it, these economic situations can get out of hand, they have in other countries, are not going to be made by even local and state police taking orders from Homeland Security, let alone by FEMA. I mean, those are the last people we want. Talk to people in New Orleans about how good FEMA is.
Take away your guns.
Right. Well, we don't want those decisions made by FEMA, and we also don't want them made by local and state police who are answerable to FEMA. We want them made by local people in their own militia structures pursuant to state law. And that's the key to the thing. You have to have legal authority. And yes, private individuals can go off, I suppose, in most states and legally form things, organizations that they call militias. They can call them anything they want. But they don't have any legal authority as the result of forming those essentially private clubs. They're private clubs. That's all they are. The militia, historically and constitutionally, are part and parcel of the government. And in fact, in a crisis situation, they are the most important part of the government. The Constitution points this out. Congress is given the power to provide for arming, disciplining, organizing, arming the militia
of the
several states, and to call them out for three reasons, and three reasons only: execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, repel invasions. Now, you take those three reasons, that's a pretty good cross-section of what you would call Homeland Security. Give me a Homeland Security situation that doesn't involve one of those three, right? What's interesting is the militia are the only institutions that the Congress, that the Constitution explicitly gives that authority. No others. Read the Constitution, you'll see it. Only the militia are explicitly given the authority to execute the laws, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Not the Army, not the Navy, not even the President directly, although he's Commander-in-Chief of the militia. So the Founding Fathers certainly foresaw that what we call Homeland Security, if it reached a critical point, we would depend upon and use, and therefore we would have to have in being and in training, the militia of the several states.
Well, we don't have that today.
That's exactly my next point. That's exactly right. If you go to the statutes in every state, certainly I've looked at, what you find, and the congressional statute on the matter, you find that instead of having all able-bodied citizens from 16 to 60, which was the basic pattern in colonial period, as part of the militia, you have the National Guard, which is not the militia at all. It's an adjunct of the Army. You have in some states things called state defense forces, which were authorized by Congress. They're also adjuncts of the National Guard, so they're not militia. Some states have what they call state guard, which are semi-militia functions. They're not really militia functions because they're not made up in principle of everyone. They're made up of small numbers of volunteers. New York State, for instance, has the New York State Guard has about 60,000 members. What's the population of New York of adults? You can see that the New York State Guard, even if it is a valid militia in principle, it's certainly not a valid militia in practice because it nowhere incorporates anything like the number of people it should. Here in Virginia and in most states, they have a thing called the unorganized militia. In Virginia, we have the National Guard, the Virginia Defense Force, and then this thing called the unorganized militia. Well, that's everybody else. Well, by hypothesis, constitutionally, you can't have an unorganized militia. The whole concept of a militia is total organization of the adult population. That doesn't mean you call on everyone every day, but at least they're part of the process. So I look at most state statutory codes, and I say, well, these people have no conception of the constitutional requirements, and we need to change that mindset.
Agreed. We got a couple of minutes when we return from this commercial break. Edwin, let's get a real good summary on why we need the militias.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond from Most Holy Family Monastery. We are now offering a critically important $10 package. The package contains three DVDs with 10 different programs, our new 658-page book called The Truth About What Really Happened to the Catholic Church After Vatican II, which is the most comprehensive book ever produced on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. You also get another 335-page book and other material. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. At the website, you can watch all of our videos for free, read sample chapters of the new book and other articles, or call us 24 hours a day at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or you can mail in your order to us at Most Holy Family Monastery, 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The price of the whole package is $10, which includes media mail shipping, $15 for UPS ground, or $30 outside the U.S. MostHolyFamilyMonastery.com.
Eating a well-balanced diet filled with whole foods is sometimes hard to achieve, so supplementation can be beneficial. But WholeFoodToday.com believes that if you want to supplement, you should be doing so with products made from complex and natural whole foods, which the body can recognize and utilize as food, rather than with synthetic formulas of isolated vitamins made in chemical factories. Whole Food Today is dedicated to bringing you the finest health products at an incredible value. Nutrient formulas for men and women, super green food formulas made from over 30 vegetables, legumes, sprouts, immunity health formulas, coconut oil, krill oil, and many other products made 100% naturally. Visit us today at www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. That's www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. Whole Food Today offers free shipping to all orders anywhere in the continental U.S. Whole Food Today, empowering people to attain and maintain extraordinary health.
We got a few minutes, listeners. We're going to conclude this program. Edwin, let me see if I've got this picture correct. Robert Mugabe is running the Zimbabwean economy in the ground with hyperinflation, price controls, and everything else like that. And if you can imagine the same type of economic chaos in this country, that's what we most likely, almost certainly, are facing in our future, correct?
Certainly could happen. That's right.
And the system, when this happens, they're going to have law enforcement under their control, so they can step forward and offer us a new economic solution with the Amero, and a new financial system, a supranational bank,
or worse.
Okay.
Right.
The solution for us is to reconstitute the militias, get state laws passed so that we have the militias engaged in law enforcement activities that are not under the direction and control of Washington, D.C., but instead are part of the law enforcement responsibilities of the states.
Well, a part of the self-government, because it includes all adult males. We're talking about the same people who are in the electorate. We're talking about the same people who are in the production in the state economy. Right? This is the whole key to the militia is it's a self-governmental body. We're not talking about some elite, even local police or state police. And we don't want an excuse. See, not having the militia, not having that kind of a structure, if you have massive chaos, social and economic chaos,
absolutely,
that is the perfect excuse for the central government to come in with these local and state police that is co-opted and take control. And I say no, in self-government, it's local people themselves that always maintain control. We don't have that mechanism now. We've essentially given the other side the excuse for using the mechanism they're setting up. We have to rectify that situation. Now, as a little ad here for people who want to get this in detail, and I think it's vital to get it in detail, go to Amazon.com, where else? Constitutional Homeland Security is the name of the book. I'm writing a number of them, but this is a number of add-ons, as it were. This is the first one. It gives an overview.
Oh, the first one is absolutely fantastic.
And it gives us some suggestions as to what people need to do to start this process of getting to our legislatures in each state to change the system. And I think these two things go hand in hand. We've been talking about money for a long time. We started talking about the militia. You think in political philosophy, the two great powers of government, the two main powers of government, always recognized in essentially any form of political philosophy, certainly in the Western world, the power of the purse
and the sword.
The power of the sword. And those two always went hand in hand. And whenever any people lost control over one of those, they lost control over their freedom, their prosperity, everything that went with it. And we have lost control to a certain degree, although we can still regain it, over the power of the purse because it's been taken over by this banker-politician interface. And we have lost control over the power of the sword, although we can regain it, because we do not have what the Constitution tells us is the most important element of that. Go to the Second Amendment. How does it read? A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It's that first part that's fascinating. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Nowhere else in the Constitution does it say that any other institution is necessary for anything.
Not even Homeland Security.
Not Homeland Security, not the Congress, not the Supreme Court, not the President, not the Army, not the Navy, nothing. The only time the Constitution identifies one of those institutions as being necessary, it's the militia.
Wow.
And necessary to security, and not simply necessary to security, but necessary to the security of a free state. So you put all that together and you say, you want to maintain not simply our security, economic and political, but you want to maintain that security not in the context of a police state, but in the context of a free state, which is the great contribution of America to political philosophy and political practice. What does our Constitution say we have to have? Not the Department of Homeland Security, but a well-regulated militia in every state.
Wow.
Because it also talks about the militia of the several states. There is no